Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:21 British Summer Time. Today is October 8th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it really has been a very exciting week indeed. Perhaps the least exciting has been stock markets. So let's edge our way in by looking at a quick review of what's been happening in stock markets this week. It's been really quite a firm week for Asian markets. The Japanese indices bounced a bit in here this week. That was on the Bank of Japan lowering interest rates to zero. They were pretty close to zero before that, so the market hasn't that hasn't done much for the value of the yen, which remains remarkably firm in here and touching the 82 yen level as I speak. Probably more of that in a moment. Elsewhere in Asia, the majority of the better performing ASEAN markets remain very close to their peaks, and a number of them hit new peaks this week. In Europe, the vast majority of indices remain within striking distance of the upper side of 4 or 6 month ranges. We've seen a number of markets push upwards to test their April highs. And in Latin America, there has been we've seen that the Argentinian and Mexican markets have broken upwards to new all-time highs. The Brazilian market is back above 70,000 for the first time in a number of months. It's been consolidating below that level for the better part of a year. The Dow Jones is, as we approach the close on Friday, is above 11,000 for the first time since May. The S&P 500 is in the region of 1,164, and it's a generally positive tone. For stock markets generally, and certainly it really does give the lie to what was extraordinarily bearish commentary back in August, which really wasn't that long ago, although given the type of action that we've seen over the last few weeks, it really feels like a very long time ago indeed. The commodity markets were absolutely storming this week, and we've seen that a number of commodities have pushed on to new high ground. The gold price hit a new high yesterday at just over $1,350. Silver hit a new 30-year high yesterday. The platinum and palladium markets are still really quite firm. In the agricultural commodity sector, today marked a really quite a remarkable rally in. Right across the boards on the agricultural front. Last Friday, you had a USDA report which was very sanguine indeed about the possible yield that the US was going to have, and another report this week peddled back on that. And when the pit trading opened in Chicago, wheat, corn, and soybeans opened limit up. So wheat was up 60, corn was up 30, and soybeans was up 70. And although they pulled back violently last Friday, they found support earlier this week. There's an excellent report that John McIntosh sent through on Tuesday, which I posted, and that really put a lot of color on just how wide of the mark the USDA estimates were, and explained how they come up with such really inaccurate estimates of what the yields are going to be like. What we've seen is that these agricultural commodities, not just the grains and beans, but cotton was also limit up, so was rough rice. Sugar has been very firm. Orange juice has found support. Cotton is also hitting new high ground. There has been a knock-on effect into the meat markets, where the higher input prices from grains is pushing up the price of meats. And this is not the kind of action that one would associate with deflation. Sooner or later, these higher food prices, higher industrial resources prices, are going to start feeding into inflationary pressures and inflationary measures right around the world. It's already happening in parts of Asia and Latin America, and it would appear to be only a matter of time before we get an inflation scare in Europe and the USA, which means that stagflation is probably a much greater risk over the medium to longer term than deflation. Getting back to the review of what's been happening this week, oil went up and had a look at the $85 area, pulled back rather violently yesterday, but has firmed once more in here today and has held above the $80 level. The natural gas price remains really quite weak, and it's now in the region of $3.65. And $3.65 really is very cheap indeed, considering that a lot of this new supply that's coming online in the form of unconventional natural gas has a break even well in excess of $4. So at $3.65, natural gas is cheap, and that's something that is sooner or later going to start to get the catch the imaginations of people who are looking both for an energy source that is low on carbon but also high on energy content and is coming from a secure source, and you can't get more secure than domestic USA. So this natural gas is a unconventional natural gas is a game changer for the long term and could have really far-reaching effects for the fuel use that we see ourselves in over the coming decades. Elsewhere in the commodities sector, the lumber price was limit up in here today. Lumber has been ranging mostly in the region of $220 to $240, and it's rallying from the lower side of that range at the moment. So we've seen a number of these commodities have been limit up in here today. The stock markets are really quite firm, and to balance this, the dollar has been very weak. The dollar has fallen from $1.18 against the euro to almost $1.40 over the last 4 months. So that's 5 cents a month, and that really is quite a remarkable decline. It's becoming overextended in the short term. With the dollar getting so very weak, we are starting to hear central bankers and monetary authorities starting to bleat about the value of the dollar. Now, in the very short term, the dollar is overextended, and the carry trade that is helping to initiate, where one might argue that we certainly don't have the same level of carry trades going on in the world today that we did back before the credit crisis, but what we do have is an inverse correlation between the US dollar and what could be deemed to be risk assets. And that is very much akin to a dollar carry trade. And because it is overextended in the short term, there is the increasing likelihood that we're going to see a bounce for the US dollar. And that is bound to put pressure on some of the risk assets, which are most overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And in that category, we can put the Asian stock markets, some of the smaller commodity-producing Latin American countries, and precious metals, and some of the other agricultural commodities. So what happens to the US dollar is a short-term headwind, or potential headwind for some of the better performing assets. But it's not as if the US dollar is going to turn into the strongest currency in the world overnight. I personally don't believe that we're going to have a dollar crisis because we have a competitive devaluation in here, and the lower the US dollar goes, the stronger other currencies get, and Japan and Europe in particular have absolutely no interest in seeing their currencies get any stronger. So if the dollar were to move into an accelerated spiral lower, then that would raise the potential for multilateral intervention to quite considerable levels. If you look at some of the currency indices, such as the dollar index or the Asian dollar index or even the Latin American dollar index, the dollar is overextended. So there's a short-term risk that unwind of that oversold condition on the US dollar could act as a headwind for some of the better performing assets. There is absolutely no evidence that that is occurring right now. And even though we had key reversals on oil and gold and silver yesterday, we haven't had any additional follow-through. The size of the reactions wasn't as large as it has been in the past, where big key reversals have marked major trend reversals. So the key to the key is size. This really is one area of life where size is very important. And the dramatic size of a key reversal is in its power to shock the market into a change. And although we had a short-term pullback yesterday, which certainly would have raised the anxiety level of short-term traders, the size of the reactions that we had yesterday weren't big enough on their own to switch this market around. And when in tandem it didn't correspond with a major weakening of the US dollar, it probably didn't force any of the people that have borrowed in, or well, basically shorted the US dollar to invest elsewhere. It hasn't necessitated those two to close out their positions. So yesterday's downward dynamic, which has been immediately countermanded in here today, or almost countermanded, was probably a warning shot across the bows. It probably means that it could be a penultimate high for gold or silver, but that would also mean that we can anticipate that they could go on and make new highs in here next week or the week after. Because we've had this overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, it's not beyond the bounds possibility that we see a little bit of a ranging consolidation in the short term. But provided we see these things holding above yesterday's lows, or at least in the region of those lows, then we can probably continue to give the benefit of doubt to the upside. We continue to see that the growth engines of the world, which are also the world's population centers, are growing at a prodigious pace and are outstripping growth in the G3 by a considerable margin. And the fact that we have GDP growth, which is well in excess of population growth and in often in excess of inflation, is raising the well, it's raising hundreds of millions of people out of poverty and greatly expanding the numbers of middle-class consumers. And they're consuming in no uncertain terms. The per capita consumption of just about all commodities is increasing. So it's not just that we have much more people in the world, but we have much more people who can afford a better standard of living. And it is that secular theme which is driving demand for just about all commodities and is helping to push some of these industrial commodities onto really quite impressive highs. Silver, sorry, copper in here today was up 10 cents 40 and pushed on to $3.78. The highs are in the region of $4, so it's really not that far away from it. Tin has also been very firm, and while nickel was weak yesterday, it rallied quite impressively in here today. We don't have the same level of overextension relative to the 200-day moving average in the industrial metals that we do in some of the precious metals or some of the agricultural commodities. And they probably are a better reflection of the continued demand for industrial resources that is needed in the emerging world. Now, there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of months about the slowdown in infrastructure development that we're getting in China, that China has built a lot of its infrastructure already and that they're now starting to build bridges to nowhere type of investment. And that marks a major change in the dynamic of the Chinese economy, because they are now getting a better return on their investment by putting their money into healthcare and social security, because it's helping to unlock the massive savings of the Chinese population and helping to develop their internal consumer economy. That's also a secular theme. And although the A-share market, which was really quite firm in here today after opening up again following the Mid-Autumn Festival, the A-share market is, or the Shanghai A-share market is really quite heavily dominated by the major industrials and the property developers, which have underperformed due to the slowdown in the global economy and the tightening measures that the Chinese authorities have engaged in. On the other hand, the better performing sectors are those that are leveraged to the growth of the consumer. So healthcare and consumer goods, and to a certain extent, the technology sector have all outperformed. And because they are, by a measure of market cap, considerably smaller than the more established industries, they don't show up on the A shares, but they do show up on the B shares or in the Shenzhen A shares. So that is a developing theme, and that's where the growth is going to come from in the Chinese market. We can probably anticipate that over the next 5 years, infrastructure development in China is probably going to take a back seat to the development of the internal economy and to raising more people out of poverty and what some might call social equity. But infrastructure development is a secular theme globally, because India has a population of 1.2 billion, and they expect it to be 1.6 billion in the next 20 years, and half of their current population are under the age of 20. And that's 600 million people that are going to be entering the major consumption period of their lives in the next decade. The Indian authorities have a massive challenge in front of them to create the economic growth and to provide the infrastructure necessary to educate, house, and feed this huge chunk of their population that's about to enter their major consumption section of their lives. And that in itself is a major secular theme. Then you have Brazil, which has got massive infrastructure bottlenecks, and if it's going to continue to unlock its economic potential, it's going to have to build a large swathes of its infrastructure if it's going to continue to lead that part of the world in terms of its growth. And there's no reason to believe that that's not exactly what it's going to do. We continue to see that we're living in a two-tier global economy, and that means that we have this remarkable growth in Asia and commodity-producing Latin America, where these economies completely bypassed the excesses of the credit crisis. And they are in a position today where they are cash-rich, where their populations are increasingly productive, and they have the resources and the trade between themselves to sustain their economic growth despite the slowdown that we've got in the US and in Europe, where governments have taken on a remarkable amount of debt, where yields have come down to historic low levels, and where the government bond markets are being sustained by governments buying their own paper. Quantitative easing is very simply a term for devaluing the currency. The competitive devaluation that we have going on between various economies in here today is helping to drive the bull market in gold, because investors are increasingly looking for something that simply cannot be printed or loaned into existence. And in historic terms, gold has been is no longer being considered a barbaric relic, but is a real store of value. And gold has had its a remarkable rhythm in the pace of its uptrend over the last decade. And we've seen important breakouts occur in 2001, 2003, 5, 7, and 9, and now in 2010. So the pattern of 18-month consolidations followed by impressive breakouts has changed, and we've now seen breakouts on consecutive years. That would suggest that the pace of the advance is picking up, that we're now into the early stages of the third psychological perception stage, which will probably end in some form of gold fever. The last big move we had in gold was as a result of inflationary pressures. That needn't necessarily be the case this time around, but inflation or deflation have two very similar aspects, and that is that they require a loss of faith in the financial system or in the ability of governments to govern the currency or the value of currencies, and with yields at such remarkably low levels, they will have difficulty going very much lower in the absence of the deflationary spiral that some of the bears continue to espouse, but which the charts show very little evidence of. And there is the real possibility that investors will simply begin to desert these government bond markets. That would help to push up yields and could easily correspond with a massive surge in precious metals. That's simply one potential outcome, and there could be a number of potential outcomes. We'll continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside for precious metals, provided their trends remain reasonably consistent. Gold has found support in the region of its 200-day moving average on a number of occasions. It's probably in one of these medium-term advances right now. It probably hasn't ended, but we're also probably halfway through at least of this impressive advance, or the current impressive advance. When we get a clear downward dynamic, particularly if it happens across a number of the precious metals on the same day and has that shock value that we have associated with other major peaks in gold over the last decade, then we'll be into another one of these medium-term corrections. But it's unlikely that this one is also going to last another 18 months, because if we are in the third psychological perception stage, we would expect greater participation. Greater participation would correspond with more money flowing into the asset class, which should shorten the duration of reactions. So if we're correct, then when we do hit the next peak, we're quite likely to have a violent pullback that is likely to offer a good buying opportunity for medium to longer term investors, or indeed short term traders. But we would expect that the next consolidation should be shorter than the previous 18-month consolidations that we saw between 2005 and 2009. And indeed, the last consolidation was less than a year. So it's an exciting time in the gold bull market, because this is where the big gains come in the third psychological perception stage. And there are a number of problems that have been written about extensively in the economies of the USA and Europe and Japan, and these countries don't have a lot of choice but to print their way out of trouble. The fiscal consolidations that we have going on in Europe right now are a valiant attempt to preserve the value of the currency, but they have a deflationary bias, and it would be an historic achievement if all of the European countries were to accept their fiscal medicine and follow through to a much more disciplined approach to the currency union. And if we look at at their track record historically, that is an unlikely prospect. So the sovereign debt problems that have been a burden for Europe over the last year probably haven't gone away. And that could be a problem going into the sort of the medium term. Over the long term, the secular themes of the greatest urbanization in history remain very much intact. There's nothing short of a nuclear holocaust or a rock from outer space hitting the world that is going to stop billions of young people growing up and moving into positions where they will be needing jobs, starting their own families, and hitting the major consumption years, periods of their lives. And that is going to drive the consumption of just about everything over the next decade and more. And these are major secular themes on which we will be focusing, I think, for a considerable time to come. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.